A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highland Pines Golf Club in Porter. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Gallant and George here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 1 o'clock hour has arrived. Time to talk some Texans football. Texans back at practice today. C.J. Stroud, Tank Dell running all over the place, looking pretty good, pretty healthy.
Which means
he's running?
Who's saying that? Who's reporting that? A lot of people are reporting. This is the time of year where I think that the fact, Joe, that we have as many people that are now reporting on the NFL as we do.
Uh-huh.
It is very annoying to hear the breakdowns of guys going up against each other in shorts with no contact against one another.
Agreed.
Half speed as well. And I feel bad for the people that actually have to do that as a job, to go out to these every single day, especially on a day like today. It is muggy.
It's gross.
Muggy AF outside. That's why you have to have a few cocktails when you're, maybe a little Pendleton whiskey while you're playing out here golf here at the occasional Invitational. But you know, you take a look at these reports that are coming out, and I just find it funny that everyone's so excited because it's the first day back, but then you sort of realize, like, oh, yeah, damn, we got, like, 4 months.
It's like the first day of school.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You're excited because you're like, oh, yeah, look at all these guys.
See all my friends.
Tank Dell's fine.
Cody Stutz is tweeting out a video of the fact that the rookies don't have handshakes with C.J. Stroud yet.
What?
Big drama.
C.J. Stroud is freezing them out. Wow.
C.J. Stroud hasn't taught them cool handshakes.
Well, not a real Texan yet.
Yeah.
You got to make it to the end of training camp before you get that real handshake.
Yep. That's the way it goes.
Also, too, I mean, it would be hard to have a handshake with every single person.
It seems like he does, though. How do you remember them all?
I would not be able to remember three, let alone having how many do you think he has right now at this moment in time?
10, 12.
That's too many.
And the first one he's doing is with a Goomba Wale. If he's got a handshake, everyone's got a handshake.
Dari Goomba Wale is a handshake.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a kicker.
He's your backup kicker.
Exactly.
He's not John Christian and Kaimi Fairbairn.
So the Chronicle put this out. 5 questions or things to watch with the Texans so far this in the camp and going forward. First one was, how do the rookies fit in?
Yep.
Do they fit in?
Well, if they're not getting handshakes with C.J. Stroud, then I mean, you may as well cut him right now. Yeah, I mean, this is one of those years where you take a look at the guys who are the newest Houston Texans, where they were drafted. I'm not expecting many of them to have much of an impact this season.
I don't think you want them to, honestly. The less we see of the rookies this year, the better. You know, like maybe I can't remember his name. The running back that they took late in the draft. Like, maybe he's your number two eventually in front of Pierce.
I even wonder about that because he's undersized and supposedly he doesn't really do anything that spectacularly. He just has great vision.
Yeah. Like, Kalen Bullock, okay. You want Petrie and Ward to be healthy and better and Bullock to not play as much. You don't want Blake Fisher to be out there that much this year. You want your offensive line. Kenyon Green supposedly looks good and healthy, according to D'Amico Ryan. Like,
I will say with Bullock, though, because Bullock actually has the ability to play center field as a safety, and I don't know that Petrie or Jimmy Ward have that. That is one area where I'd like to see him, like third and longs and stuff like that, second and longs, passing, obvious passing situations. But, yeah, for the most part, you're not looking for many of these guys to contribute that much. I know some people are thinking that Kamari Lassiter is going to get moved to outside corner. Maybe, maybe not. But, honestly, no one has a clue until we actually see it in a game. And I would doubt it at this moment in time just based off his size.
He would be the one that I would assume would play the most. If it's not without injury being put in play here, I would assume Lassiter has the best chance to get on the field just because of the depth that you have there with Henderson, Okuda. And ESPN put out an article yesterday, I think it was, or The Athletic, one signing for each team. They said Xavien Howard for the Houston Texans. Like, they still have to really address the cornerback two spot, who's going to play opposite Derek Stingley Jr. So maybe Lassiter ends up being that guy, or Desmond King somehow moves to the outside. Like, that seems unlikely as well. But like how the rookies fit in, I hope they don't. I hope they don't play. I hope they learn and develop this year and play rotational snaps, and that's about it. Their second question, how is Tank Dell in his health? We're joking about it, but, like, the videos of him, he's running very well. He's running fast.
Impervious to bullets, not impervious to using him on the interior line in the goal line packages.
Yep, so let's stay away from certain bars and restaurants, and let's stay away from blocking on the inside, and we'll be good to go. That's how I feel about Tank Dell.
Yeah, pretty much. It's so crazy that he was in that spot. And I know a lot of people after the on the field, like the Sanford club. Sorry, I'm not Will Kunkel, Joe. Okay. Look, I'm looking at this spot and I'm thinking about why is he a guy who is smaller than me from a weight perspective and height perspective? Why is that guy anywhere close to the goal line mosh pit in the middle of a game, and you wonder where would the Texans be at the end of the year if he wasn't in that spot? And I saw a lot of people after the fact that were trying to explain it away. It is football. Yes, football. Freakish things happen on a football field. That should not have been one of them.
Yeah, well, you put him in the position for a freakish thing to happen. So, like, let's never do it again. Nico Collins' extension. That's one thing to watch from the Chronicle. I agree with. I would like to see Nick Caserio be pretty aggressive here and get this thing done before the start of the season.
Because if he has a great season, it's going to cost you more, and there will probably be more wide receiver contracts that are taken care of either the remainder of this offseason or maybe in the middle of this coming regular season. And I think he has shown in the past calendar year that he's got some special traits. He's a huge guy that actually has the ability to run by an entire defense. And on top of that, he is difficult to tackle. He's elusive in space. He runs like a really fast tight end with the ball in his hands. And that's hard to find. It's not saying it's impossible to find, but he's developed into a really good player. And that's something I wasn't sure we would see, because usually you see that big jump from year one to year two. But year two to year three, he made a huge jump. And having a great quarterback helps. And maybe knowing that you have this great quarterback might be a way for you to lower the price for Nico Collins. Just a little bit, like a little bit of a discount, CJ Stroud discount.
If he has a big season again this year, then he's going to get a similar contract to whatever T. Higgins gets next year in the offseason. Like, he's probably not going to get what Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson are about to get, but T. Higgins will hit free agency next year, and someone's going to pay him, overpay him. He's a good player, but hasn't produced as elite number one yet in his time because he's been overshadowed by Ja'Marr Chase in his career. So whatever Higgins is get is what Nico's going to get. And Nico might get more because he's gonna be better than T. Higgins this year, I would think, again. So I would try to do that contract now before he just continues to get more and more expensive. The cap's going to go up again next year in the NFL. So there's another reason why his contract will be more expensive next season. You sign him now, it's going to look like a discount in about 6 months' time frame. So I would say that's definitely, to me, number one priority for the Texans right now. How good the new defense will be, something to look for this upcoming season.
That, I think that's the biggest question about them this year, because they added a lot to the pass rush, and theoretically that's going to complement what the Texans can do offensively really well. You have an offense that is capable of scoring a ton of points, and you've got a pass rush that's capable to just send wave after wave of pass rushers after a quarterback, then that guy's going to have a tough time if the Texans get a lead. And you want to be playing from ahead as much as possible, but there are questions, I think, about the interior of the defensive line. There's questions about the safety play, and there's a huge question about that number two corner, especially with all the good quarterbacks you're going up against this year. Because whoever's at number cornerback number two might get bullied. And then on top of that, like, Derek Stingley, is he going to be healthy for a full year?
We posted this video today on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, a bunch of places. Everywhere you can find all of our short-form videos. Killer Bees were having a discussion yesterday about this list they found, and it ranked the best positional groups in the NFL. This list had the Cleveland Browns as the best defensive line in the NFL. Jeremy and Joel pushed back on that pretty heavily. They said Texans, number one defensive line in the NFL. What say you?
Huh?
Yeah. Now, their argument was that – their biggest argument from Joel was that Za'Darius Smith, who saw plenty when he was in Green Bay, is on the downside of his career, and that Will Anderson or Daniel Hunter, whichever one you want to view as the number two, between those two guys and Autry, they severely outweigh, you know, what Za'Darius Smith and the defensive line brings outside of Myles Garrett.
If we're talking sack totals, fine, but I'm sorry. Name one of their defensive tackles. Danico Autry is technically a defensive end that's going to play a lot in the defensive tackle spot. in pass rush situations. Name one of their defensive tackles off the top of your head. And I know
Foley. Fatukasi.
Right, exactly.
I mean, but that's only because I can't pronounce
it. It's not to say they're bad players or anything like that necessarily. And honestly, they might be complimented very well by the guys that are on the edge. But I'm sorry. Your defensive tackle position is too much of, I think, a weakness for you to say that they are the number one unit in the NFL. Now, well, again, I could go through every single roster in the league, and I could find one, I guess, that's better. But I'm sorry. There's no way that off the top of my head I would be putting the Houston Texans number one.
Yeah, will they lead the sacks in the NFL? Will they lead the NFL in sacks this year? Maybe. Does that mean they have the best defensive line? I don't know. I'm to what you're saying, I'm curious how they're going to handle when they on Christmas Day when they play against Derrick Henry. Like, They did pretty well last year on the interior defensive line, and they let Collins and Rankins walk or trade them, and they didn't really replace them with big body guys. So, could they be the number one defensive unit in the NFL? Absolutely. I have my doubts until I see it in front of me.
Just look at the Eagles. They got Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, and Brandon Graham. And that's just one team, and that's off the top of my head too.
Yeah.
Nah. They're not number one. Look, they're better. There's no doubt that they're better this year. They got waves that they can send after people. But best defensive line in the league, no, you got to have a better tackle.
Last one in the year is just a big year for Stroud, obviously. How big can it be for CJ Stroud?
Is MVP on the table?
Yes. Without a doubt.
I think it's on the table. They have to win a lot of games, though. And that's, I think, going to hold him back, ultimately. I think that statistically he can put up numbers, but is he going to have the best record in the league? Because, I mean,
what matters.
We've seen Tua put up huge numbers, but he's never really been in the MVP conversation because he hasn't won the big games, you know?
Yeah, if you look at the past history of guys who have won MVP, typically they are the number one or two team in the NFL in terms of wins.
Yeah.
CJ Stroud, at least according to this website, is 5th best odds to win the MVP.
Who's ahead of him?
Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, who looks like Anakin Skywalker now.
Yeah, he's got a lot of hair.
Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes.
Not burnt, dying, thought that he could win against Obi-Wan on the high ground, Anakin.
No, but literally right before that happened.
Episode 3 Anakin, though.
That's what he looks
right,
like.
Right, not Episode 2 Anakin or Episode 1 Anakin.
With like the little rat tail thing?
Yeah. Hey, that's a Jedi haircut, man.
It looks weird.
Yeah, I know. I think they were trying to go for George Lucas was probably thinking, like, you know what? Let's do something that looks like a samurai topknot. And they settled on a rat tail.
Great decision here, George.
It's a little bit too trailer park for Jedi. No offense to all those in trailer parks. I think even you guys would be like, the rat tail? Hell no.
The only player I'd have him, Josh Allen being second in MVP odds this year kind of blows my mind. I guess the viewpoint is they trade Diggs, they win the division, they're still a top two seed in the AFC. Maybe you give it to them. But most people don't view that Diggs, his end of tenure in Buffalo, as that special. They view it as the end of his career or the down point of his career. So I would have CJ in front of Burrow. I mean, in front of Allen. The rest of the list is fine. But Lamar Jackson won't win, though, by the way. He will not be MVP this year.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some bias against him because
postseason bias.
Well, yeah. It's unfair in a way, but also he's won it twice. And there's no playoff results. And the funny thing about the MVP award in every single sport is that, I mean, it's about narrative. I mean, when Jose Altuve won it, I think part of it had to do with the fact that he had been so good for the 4 years before, in addition to the Astros also being the best team in the majors that year. But, you know, every single year in baseball, at the very least, they generally give it to, like, Mike Trout or Shohei Ohtani or something like that. I felt like Altuve winning in 17 was largely a product of, you know, the 4 years, though, where he led the American League in hits every single one of them. In addition to that season, in the NBA, you know, you get sick. Like last year, they didn't give it to Jokic because they didn't want to give it to him 3 years in a row. Then he wins the title, so they give it to him this year. Mm. Now he didn't win it, so now they're probably going to stay away from giving it to Jokic for a while. It's one of those things that happens.
It is. All right. East Coast bias. It's prevalent. And it was on display this weekend, and a lot of people are upset about it. But what are the things that we think get the most biased coverage nationally, locally? Twitch, this segment's for you. That's next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highland Pines Golf Club in Porter. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
So before the Pacers-Knicks game, that last one, before the Pacers advanced to the Eastern Conference Finals, how much of the pregame coverage did you watch?
I'm trying to think. Not really that much.
I didn't really watch much either.
I feel like I tuned into the game and it was already in progress. And I think I'd heard about it on social media, but like looking at Twitter a couple of times on Sunday, I had no idea how bad it was though until I listened to a couple of people just absolutely raking them for their coverage. It was Dan Patrick. It was Dan Le Batard.
Dan Patrick said he was embarrassed for ESPN.
I would have been too in that spot. I mean, look, obviously New York is a more important market for the bottom dollar at ESPN than Indianapolis is. But just because a lot of the people that work at ESPN think that it's in the best interests of the network if that team wins, you have to cover a playoff game neutrally. Mm-hmm. If you're not capable of doing it, then you shouldn't be doing it. Mike Breen even said, because he's the guy that does regular play-by-play for the Knicks all season long, even said, like, yeah, I am trying my best to make sure that there is no bias here. But at least he's play-by-play, and you still heard him saying bang when the Pacers were hitting big shots. Mm-hmm. That guy's a pro. But the rest of the production, I was stunned, Joe, when I actually took the time to see what was being complained about. The East Coast bias or the New York City bias, it is a real thing, and we all know it, but it's one thing for it to go down the way that it did on Sunday, which is the jumping the shark moment, in my opinion, of a New York City bias.
I mean, I still think the most bizarre thing that they did was that as the game is, before it starts, you know, they show players walking in, how they're dressed, the swag they have as they walk into the stadium. The third person they showed was Stephen A. Smith. They showed Stephen A. Smith, one of their co-workers, walking into Madison Square Garden. Why? He's not like, it's not Spike Lee. It's not someone like some super fan. It's Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah.
Like, why? Like, that's what a bizarre, bizarre thing. And typically, I wouldn't expect East Coast bias and awesome. We'll go to Bob Myers here first. This is what happened during halftime when the Pacers were controlling the game. And during the ESPN halftime show, they asked former Warriors GM Bob Myers about what he thought about the Pacers.
What stood out to you from the Pacers?
Well, a lot. Starting with OG couldn't go. I mean, that happened a long time ago, it feels like. But I think a lot of people expected him to be a difference maker in this game. And so psychologically, you think you're whole. And then 4 minutes into the game, I think we all realized, great try by OG. You applaud the effort, but he didn't have it. So now the Knicks have to come back to the huddle and say, okay, he's not going to be here for us this afternoon. So now what are we going to do? So you bring in some of the subs. Brooks was great.
They asked him about the Pacers, and he immediately talked about the New York Knicks for 30 seconds.
Why? Not listening?
I bet that they
pre-recorded, like pre-written response?
Well, I imagine they had discussed a different conversation before that halftime report, but I mean, she asked you a point-blank question about the Pacers, and he didn't talk about the Pacers at all. He just talked about the injury to a Knicks player. We get it. Guess what? Everyone deals with injuries over the course of a season. I don't know why the Knicks were so special in the amount of injuries that they dealt with this postseason. They definitely dealt with a lot. There's no denying that. But it is weird how they were made to be such unlucky, oh, woe is me, oh, shucks, just bad luck franchise, as opposed to some of the other teams that are in the tournament right, or in the NBA playoffs right now.
Yeah, I mean, NBA ratings are down 9% so far this year. Now, the most watched sporting event this weekend was Timberwolves Nuggets Game 7. It's Game 7. It's going to have some juice. You have the defending champs. But it's Denver and Minnesota. And that kind of goes to this conversation of, like, you don't have to just talk about New York and the Cowboys. And I get why they do it, because they're trying to appeal to a mass audience. But it is embarrassing that, like, it's one thing for First Take to do this. Like that's their call. That's the producers there thinking, like, that's what leads the story, these big markets. I get it. It has worked so well for them. But for a pregame show or a halftime show, like, you should talk about both teams. And it's going on in the broadcast, too. To me, it's frustrating because typically, like, you walk away from a World Series broadcast in 2017, and what are you going to hear? Well, if you look at Astros Twitter, everyone says Joe Buck hates the Astros. If you look at Dodgers Twitter, everyone says Joe Buck hates the Dodgers. Like, most of the time, that's what you get from broadcasts, is when someone says a broadcaster hates my team, if you just look at the opposing fans, they're saying the exact same thing. That means you have a neutral broadcast. This broadcast was anything but that. It was kind of exhausting.
Yeah,
to be honest.
Before the game, you had Stephen A. Smith doing a pep talk.
Yeah, let's hear that. Here's Stephen A. Smith.
It is your moment. Please rally the Knicks faithful for a totally unbiased opinion of the outcome of this game.
Oh, boy. Good luck with that.
Well, see, I don't have to rise. I don't have to rise New York to the occasion because they all here. Everybody's ready. Ignore Bob Myers, Mr. California. Ignore Wilbon, Mr. Chicago. They ain't here right now. You understand what's at stake. It's been since 2000 that we've been in the conference finals. We've waited 24 years for this moment right here. OG Anunoby is back. Josh Hart's going to play. When you talk about Game 7, it comes down to grinding. It comes down to guts. It comes down to who would have been. Come up in here. Come up in here, Spike Lee. You come right here. Right? Come right here. This orange is blue skies, baby. This is what it's all about right here. This is what we've been waiting for right here. It's Game 7. This is what it's about.
Get that hat.
Put it back on it. The New York Knicks, it's about grinding. It's about guts. It's about heart. That's what games are.
Game
7. This is what it's about. This is what we've waited for right here. One game.
I mean, this is, again, before a playoff game between the Knicks and Pacers that's broadcast to the entire country. I get that there's a lot of Knicks fans in this country. There are not so many Knicks fans that in that spot, more people are going to want to hear that. And to piggyback off of what you had talked about earlier, Joe, about how they showed Stephen A. Smith walking into the stadium just like he was one of the main players in this game.
Yeah.
ESPN has gotten to this point where Stephen A. Smith, the character, is just as important as the sporting events that they're throwing. And that's crazy. His show and the way that he does it, I think he does deserve credit because he is very entertaining, even if he is sometimes talking out of his ass about a lot of different sports. Mm-hmm. Generally, all of them that aren't football and basketball. And sometimes football. You know, there's a lot that's being pulled. But it's not about the personalities during a game. You know, if you're tuning in to watch a basketball game, you're tuning in to watch a basketball game, to see stories told about the players. What does the long-suffering New York sports fan have on the long-suffering Indiana Pacers fan? You know, I mean, the Pacers have had some good teams and have been just as close with no cigar.
Yeah.
In the late 90s with Reggie Miller, with Larry Bird running the show, with Paul George there before, and God, who was that center that they had? Roy Hibbert? I mean, they had some good teams too, but like, oh, the Knicks, because they're in New York, they're the most long-suffering. Get out of here with that. And I like that everyone was in agreement on this. There is a point of too much. I get it. Like, you're catering
they
to the East Coast and the Northeastern markets, but it's very annoying when you're doing it like that. Much like it's just as annoying when a Bill Simmons podcast features random references to the Boston Celtics for no reason at all, or the New England Patriots, or all Boston sports.
Yeah, but even then, like, that's Bill's company. Like,
that is true.
And
it's
like,
his company.
If Stephen A. was doing the Stephen A. Smith podcast and like that he does, and he wants to give this speech, that's fine. I just think it's a bizarre behavior and bizarre thing to put before a game. Like, it's weird to me. Like, is Dan Orlovsky going to be doing this to the Detroit Lions next year? Probably not. It's just weird. Like, I just don't understand, like, why they do this. Are the Knicks the most nationally biased coverage we get, you think? Because the Cowboys, it just seems like they get talked about a lot. I don't know how much their coverage is biased. More, it's just shoved down our throat. I think it's a little bit different. So I think the Knicks, I would say the Knicks is the most biased coverage in sports.
Yeah, they are put on a pedestal in a weird way. I don't know if it's quite them. I feel like the Lakers still get discussed.
Oh, yeah.
And LeBron in particular being on the Lakers just makes it a hurricane of – but it, since it's not on the East Coast, it's a little bit different perhaps. The Dallas Cowboys are constantly brought up too. What have the Cowboys done in years, you know? So, I mean, it's the usual suspects. It's those three. Well, check that. I guess it's the Yankees in baseball, but baseball is such an afterthought now for a lot of these national programs.
They don't talk about
it. They don't really talk about it as much, right? Unless you get like Mad Dog Russo yapping about something.
Even then, he might just talk good about the Astros. Locally, most bias we have.
I think we're seeing it on the Twitch with like the amount of like, oh, it was just one game for Framber Valdez. I mean, the Astros fans, they are generally pushing back when they hear bad things about the team, and this year is the first time where they're actually like, oh, well, this isn't so great. So yeah, I mean,
there's probably a fair argument that like the bias is pretty heavy towards the Texans right now.
Definitely,
just like how good the vibes are.
I mean, we brought it up a couple of times. Like they almost lost that game to the Colts and missed the playoffs. They almost lost a bunch of games, lots of one score games over the course of the year. They're obviously fun and you're excited because you got a quarterback and you got a seemingly good head coach. But that schedule is going to be tough, and I don't know that everyone's going to be happy at the end of the year.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. It's going to be an interesting year. I would say, yeah, probably the Rockets definitely. There's the Twitter – now, like the fanboys, I would say, are the most prevalent within the Rockets media circle, I would say. Like the Rockets can do no wrong most of the time, no matter what. And we still got people standing for James Harden. What are we doing? It's 2024. Why?
There's not as many. It's generally a couple of just really loud engagement farmer accounts that have somehow found a way to become actually people who are listened to. And you know what? I wish them well.
I do too.
I wish them well.
What's going on in the NFL? Our 10-minute drill. That's next here on Glotton George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Stand, hush.
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant and Joe George. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time.
You know, Paul, occasionally when players return for OTAs and start to get ready for the season, you get some juicy stuff, okay? Dolphins safety Javon Holland was asked about Anthony Weaver today, after he took over for defensive coordinator Vic Fangio, who's now with the Eagles. He said, quote, it's a complete 180. Holland raved about how Weaver relates to the players. Asked what the difference is with Weaver, Holland said, ready, Paul? Quote, it's the fact that he's a good person that makes the difference. Spicy.
I love the quotes this time of year. I mean,
he just said Vic Fangio's a bad dude.
I like that. I like that, you know? This is actually a good quote this time of year because generally it's all nothing burgers. Like I sent this to our text line. Kyle Pitts is calling himself a super rookie for the 2024 season.
Because he has a quarterback that can throw to him?
Well, also because it's his third year.
Yeah.
I guess Jordan Love was a super rookie last year as well. And you know what?
Plenty of experience, though.
I think it's pretty interesting how Vic Fangio is getting any shots fired at him. Like, I thought he was like a very well-respected defensive coach.
He was only there for a year, and then they let him walk. So,
I mean, something was up, clearly. But what was actually up, honestly, I do not know.
Yeah, I'm the Dolphins are an interesting team next year to see. Because, like, we had high expectations for Vic Fangio and that defense. They didn't really live up to par last year. Like, they were good, but like, they weren't great. Jalen Ramsey will be healthy this year, you would think, for the whole season, so we'll see. The other thing that always happens, lots of hype for players that are currently on your roster, especially a year after where things don't go well. Dave Canales, or Canales, however you say it, the new head coach.
Dave Canales, the guy who wrote a book about cheating on his wife.
He did what?
Oh, you didn't hear about that?
No.
Oh, yeah, Dave Canales wrote a book about how he cheated on his wife but then found God, and this book is supposed to serve as a model for people who have cheated on their wives so that they can maintain the relationship.
Oh.
A lot of people were saying that Dave Canales was dreamy this offseason.
Don't think I'm going to read that one.
I kind of want to read it, to be perfectly honest. I kind of want to read it because, like,
I mean, the balls to write a book about that and put your entire family
now look
in the crosshairs where you embarrassed your life in the spotlight. I mean, it's just like an unbelievable blowhard move, especially if you're like, yeah, I'm going to teach people how to do it. He's very religious. Nothing against religious folks. But this is one of those religious people that I'm definitely looking at with a bit of a side eye as compared to others.
Yeah, if we do the Gallant and George Book Club and actually do books instead of TVs and movies like we were talking about when we thought the Astros were going to be terrible for the whole series, the whole season, I think this is our list so far.
The book is called The Marriage, The Question That Changed Everything.
Okay, so that'll be on our list.
It's about infidelity, drinking, and addiction.
Does it say that on the cover? Because I want to see a social experiment where Joe doesn't tell his wife that he's going to read this book, put it on the bookshelf, and have her come home and find it.
Well, considering how, like, she, like, look, my wife, not Christian, as far as we'll go with that conversation, but she won another book that'll be in our book club, which actually, I kind of want to do something with this. She saw Fred's book on the counter yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, Jesus left Chicago? Or Jesus has left Chicago? And she's like, what is this?
Yeah.
I'm like,
not a fan of ZZ Top.
Huh? I'm like, she's not. I'm like, it's not what you think. This one, so I think we had this book, Fred's book, and then I think we read OJ's book in honor of him getting, you know, done.
Well, those two books sound far more interesting. I'm just going to read off the cover. So it says, this marriage, the question that changed everything. There's a picture of him wearing a vest, shout out to Nick Cesario, and his wife, they're holding their hands. It's by Dave and Lizzie Canales. The quote, being vulnerable and honest in our marriages can be very difficult, but that is exactly what Lizzie and Dave have provided with this marriage. Todd Downing, offensive coordinator, Tennessee Titans, RIP in peace. Foreword by Tony Dungy. I'm immediately out. Immediately out. I don't want to hear St. Dungy's sanctimonious ass.
Yeah.
Focus on your family.
I'm gonna pass on anything to do with Tony. But how he got here.
Anyway, Dave Canales said some interesting things.
He was pumping up Bryce Young, whatever. You think we're ever gonna compare CJ and Bryce again?
Yes, he did. And I think that there's a chance that we're always going to be comparing CJ and Bryce Young, basically for their entire careers, but it does feel like CJ is the hare ahead of the tortoise. Like, it's a pretty big distance for Bryce Young to make up at this moment in time.
Yeah, I kind of hope we do. I like Bryce Young. I'd like to see a short person succeed, Paul. I want to stand with short people. So, like, Bryce Young having success would be great. But no, I don't think we're going to really have these comps again. To me, it's moved on already.
Right.
It's Caleb now.
Man, I don't know. I'm not putting Caleb up there yet.
But
I understand that.
But that would be more of the conversation.
Yeah.
Is because Bryce Young failed. You could even say Jaden Daniels and Drake May and all these quarterbacks. Like,
yeah.
Like, Bryce failed his rookie year. If he doesn't succeed in year two, then it's going to move on. I mean, CJ Stroud is going to be compared to every single quarterback the rest of time. It was luck, and then now CJ Stroud has surpassed him. Every single draft, until someone does surpass CJ, which is win two playoff games and have a great year, at every single draft, Adam Schefter, Mel Kiper, Daniel Jeremiah, they're all going to say, can this guy be CJ Stroud? Like, that's to me the question for the foreseeable future in the NFL. Let's see what else is going on. The Jags are working on this Lawrence extension.
Right, and a la what we talked about yesterday with Tua Tagovailoa, I mean, we're talking about $50 million a year probably. But it seems like the Jaguars are more willing to do that with Lawrence than the Dolphins are to do it with Tua. By the way, Pro Football Focus ranked the top 25 players under 25. CJ Stroud, 7. Guess who's number 3? Trevor Lawrence. Lawrence over Stroud. There's still some people that are pushing that.
That's not going to go away.
They
hyped him as a generational quarterback. People are going to hold on to that for as long as they possibly can.
That's the more fair comparison probably going forward versus Stroud than with Bryce Young.
Yeah.
Because I think also them both being in the AFC South. And to what you said too, Lawrence was promised as this incredible player. And there's no doubt that he has some traits that you marvel at. I mean, he's got a cannon for an arm. He's surprisingly mobile. But he puts the football on the ground a lot. He overthrows the ball a lot, too. And I still feel like even though the Texans lost that game, I thought Stroud looked way better than Lawrence did in that game, where Lawrence was the beneficiary of a bunch of broken plays by the Texans' defense.
Yeah, I would not have Trevor Lawrence. I would give Trevor Lawrence $50 million over Tua, though, if you made me choose between them. And there's more reason to give it to Trevor. He had better potential from the get-go. He's had moments of success. He led the playoff comeback. Like, the organization clearly believes. He doesn't have the health risks. Like, if they give Trevor Lawrence $50 million, I get it. They are in Jacksonville also. Who are you going to get to sign there? Like, if there were to be a big-name free agent, let's just say we lived in this world, and they had to choose between Jacksonville and Miami, you're going to choose Miami. Because of the place, because of the coach, because of the weapons on offense, even if Tyreek Hill retires at the end of the year like he's talked about, like, you still have Jalen Waddle. Mm-hmm. So I would rather pay Trevor than Tua, but they're both going to get paid, most likely.
Probably, yep, and good problem to not have, to have someone that's good but not that you want to be with long term.
Yeah. Rashee Rice is at OTA, is expected to participate in all activities. Despite the 8 felony charges, it does sound like some of them are getting dropped, though.
Yeah, the photographer at the Dallas nightclub has, I guess, asked to drop the charges against Rashee Rice, which makes you wonder, what did Rashee Rice perhaps do, to make this problem go away?
That one can go away, but the fact is that it happened. The SMU stuff happened where he shot a gun into an empty car because he thought a basketball player was sleeping with his girlfriend.
As one does.
Crashing the Lambo or whatever it was.
As one does.
Walking away down the highway.
As one does.
He's going to get suspended for at least 4 games, I would say.
I feel like the NFL is so random with the suspensions.
That's why I think it's at least 4.
What if it's like 5.5?
You never know.
I like half-game suspensions. Bring those back.
Oh, it's like college football.
Did Jameis Winston get like a half-game suspension?
Did you remember when he got
grab legs?
Remember when he got suspended and he still showed up in full pads?
Yeah.
And Jimbo had to kick him out. Was that a half-game suspension?
It's a real winner right there.
Or was he out for the whole? I can't remember.
I think that was the whole game. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that game he was supposed to be out.
But
for
he
the
thought
whole
Jimbo was bluffing. So he, like, just still showed up.
No, he's just a real leader, and he just in case it was, like, I don't know, a motivational ploy against Thad Castle and Blue Mountain State, you know?
Yeah, it's
there's an episode of that show where to get Thad Castle, the star linebacker, to come back, he basically, the coach of the Blue Mountain State Mountain Goats, has a cocaine party for Thad and convinces him that he has been arrested by the Florida police so that he won't get drafted and that he comes back to play for one last year.
Yep. I remember that.
Yeah.
Jameis Winston, Deshaun Watson. What a quarterback room they've got in Cleveland right now.
Who's the other guy in there? There's got to be somebody else.
I think there was another quarterback.
I mean, Johnny Manziel's not there anymore.
One of my favorite things about the occasion.
I hope it's someone like really religious.
Every single year is the football signed by Johnny Manziel's that are here. Because they're always here. All right, when we get back.
Dorian Thompson Robinson and Tyler Huntley.
All right, let's get into some fears we have next. Paul is going to open up his heart and tell us why he's scared of baseballs. That's next on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highland Pines Golf Club for ESPN 97.5 and 92.5's Occasional Invitational.
Gallant and George here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Highland Pines Golf Club at the Occasional Invitational here. Great turnout today. Beautiful, beautiful day. A little toasty outside, but still a beautiful day. So, Paul, this random Twitter account has 13.7 million views on her last tweet. Her name is Liz McGuire. She took Bad Movie.
It's a TV show.
It was a movie, too.
Oh.
You probably just aged out of it And that was like when I was still watching Disney Channel.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Hillary Duff.
Yeah. She said, "Hey, Blue Jays, I got my face mashed by a 110 mile an hour fast a foul ball off Bobichet's bat." The first photo is like the current is right after it happened, and there's literally a baseball size bump.
Yeah, it's a
massive on her
bruise.
Forehead. And then there's the when it went away and just the black eye that she has. This looks gnarly.
She didn't get gnarly. A ball. She didn't get a baseball bat for it. I got to say, as someone who has been hit in the head with lots of baseballs.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Well, I play baseball. I got drilled in the head with baseballs while playing baseball. So much
okay.
that I eventually became scared of the baseball.
Were they throwing them at you on purpose?
Sometimes, yes. I believe that my pitching coach, who was a former major league pitcher who once held the record for saves in a season, I believed my freshman year of high school at Shorecrest Prep, playing for the Fighting Chargers, the best team at our high school, I believed that he was doing it on purpose.
Time out. The pitching coach was the one throwing at your head?
Yeah.
That's not child abuse?
Nah, it's baseball.
It's one, like, I thought this story was going to be like, yeah, the kids I play with have no aim, or I'm such a prick, no offense, that, with my bat flips that they were throwing it at me.
No, because I never flipped bats.
This adult was throwing at your dome?
This is at a point, too. I was a freshman, so I was basically like prepubescent. So here I am, this 4'11" person who could barely swing the -3 bats that you're required to have at high school. And here's the thing. I had to stand in the batter's box, but I didn't even get to swing the bat. I would stand in the batter's box while the pitcher would throw it to the catcher.
Uh-huh.
I would just stand in the batter's box, and then the coach, once the ball got to the pitcher, would pick up the baseball that he had in his hand and hit it to either first base, second base, shortstop, third base.
Yeah.
But very often, I would, while standing in the batter's box, get plunked by a former major league pitcher in the head.
Did you, like, terrorize this dude
no,
at practice?
No, I did nothing.
Because this really sounds like a personal vendetta, Paul.
I felt like it was as well.
Was there any other? Are you sure it wasn't?
There's other stories I have about this
pitcher. Can we find this guy and get him on
Bobby
the show?
Bobby Thigpen? Yeah. Listen, I should ask him about it sometime.
That would be great. Look, I confronted my demons, okay? I called Jeremy Booth a clown, and you brought him into the studio so I could call him a clown to
maybe
his face.
Maybe we should have him on. So here's the thing. I doubt he remembers it.
No, but this would be so funny. Like to just now, see, this one I would want to do.
Radio host calls out former Major League record holder for saves in a season, Bobby Thigpen. Throwing at him in practice.
We got to hoodwink him, though. Who did he pitch for?
The White Sox.
The White Sox. So they put the Astros and the White Sox play in the next, like, month and a half.
Yeah.
So maybe we get him to come on the show to preview Astros-White Sox. In reality, we're just going to ambush him, saying that he committed child abuse by throwing at your dome relentlessly.
No, he's just a coach being a coach. But that wasn't the only time, though, that I got hit in the head as a high school freshman playing for the Shorecrest Prep Chargers, or in eighth grade playing for the Thayer Academy Tigers. There was a game in eighth grade where the same pitcher was trying to throw a curveball on me up and inside, and every single time that, like the first two times, it almost hit me in the head.
Okay.
Third time it hit me in the head. So I walked out, again, like 4'8", like 100 pounds, but like I was a little angry person. So I walked out to the mound with my bat. And I was going to use the bat. And I remember everyone, because I let's just say I had been in trouble for using a baseball bat in sixth grade.
Okay.
A lot of people in my school thought that I was going to use it. Luckily, the umpire and the manager got in the way, and I moved on to first base. The biggest regret of my sports playing career is getting caught in a rundown between third and home plate, and I had a chance to just run the pitcher over, and I went back because I figured I would be able to deke the pitcher out, and instead I got tagged out by the third baseman.
Okay.
Still, my biggest regret, I didn't just truck stick that guy. But later that same freshman year, we did this drill in the Florida Sun where you would basically have to find a ball that your coach had thrown up into the sun. We didn't have sunglasses
on.
You spin around in a circle like 8 times, and you look up to get it. And I got hit right in the eye. I had a shiner for like 5 weeks. or four. I don't know. I don't know how long those last. But it lasted a while, it felt like. It just hit me right in the eye. So I got hit in the head with baseball so much that I got to a point where they scare the ever-living bejesus out of me.
Yeah, I understand.
If they're going over 70 miles per hour, it's terrifying.
Yeah, I was a stubborn kid, so I was awful at baseball. I wouldn't wear my glasses when I realized I needed them. So I couldn't see the ball until it was basically crossing home plate. So I was terrible at it. So I quit early. Because
no.
I was just like, I didn't want to wear the goggles. I thought they made me look like such a dork. So I wouldn't wear them. And my parents wouldn't let me have contacts yet. Because my mom was like, I'm not going to put these contacts in your eyes. I understand.
It's a shame because they seem to have aged well. The people that are wearing Rex-Max or whatever the hell they're called now, like people think that they look kind of cool.
Well, because there's only like three or four people in baseball that probably still wear them. But
yeah.
Isn't like the biggest D in the world wear them? Joe Kelly?
Joe Kelly wears glasses, yeah. Is he the biggest D in the world or the biggest D in the world?
Second one.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Anything else in sports that scares you, Paul?
Baseball's going
so
above
do you get,
70 miles per hour.
Like, do you, so would you sit in the outfield?
I played outfield, yeah.
No, like now?
Oh,
like,
I'd sit
like,
in the outfield.
Like, the home run areas?
The outfield, yeah, that's fine. That doesn't scare me. A baseball coming.
But that's where this girl got 110 off the dome.
In the outfield?
Or I guess it was a foul ball.
It must have been a foul ball that's like off the first baseline or the third baseline or something like that.
I guess those
that
nets
probably went straight
I guess those
in.
Nets didn't work, huh?
I imagine that they are not at every single ballpark as extended as
no,
they need
oh,
to be.
Oh, yeah, as extended, yeah.
Like, I bet some they are and some there aren't. I mean, it should honestly. I think Japan's done it well. I know a lot of people don't like the idea that you have to have a net up for the entire foul lines.
Yeah.
But listen, baseball, no offense, even with the pitch clock, is a slow and plodding sport, and we all have smartphones. The game done changed. It's hard to maintain attention on a baseball game for 2.5 hours.
All right, when we get back, how important is tonight's game? Just maybe for the vibes of how we're feeling, or how you're feeling, how the team's feeling. That's next here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.